This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime. We'll begin this week with Whitehall 1212 and Murder in the Black Market, their story from January 13, 1952. Then it's Sexton Blake Detective with Lilies for the Ladies, his story from August 24, 1967.
Whitehall 1212, quickly!
This is Scotland Yard.
For the first time in history, Scotland Yard opens its secret files to bring you the authentic, true stories of some of its most baffling cases.
These are the true stories, the unvarnished facts, just as they occurred, reenacted for you by an all-British cast. Only the names of the participants have, for obvious reasons, been changed. The stories are presented with the full cooperation of Scotland Yard.
Research on Whitehall 1212 is prepared by Percy Hoskins, chief crime reporter of the London Daily Express. The stories for radio are written and directed by Willis Cooper. Here are the participants in case number 604-MR-530 from the official files of Scotland Yard. Leo M. Stefanovich, former member of the Polish Navy.
Yes, I deserted the Navy.
Marian Konieczki, who'd fought in Spain.
What I am interested in is money.
Kazimir Kashuba, who was found dead. Albert Stevens, the copper's narc.
It's a living.
Superintendent Alistair Watkins of Scotland Yard.
I must warn you that if you expect high adventure in Limehouse or sinister Orientals lurking in dark byways, you'd best turn off your wireless now. We're quite ordinary people at Scotland Yard. Professional policemen, catchers of criminals, and we don't go in much for the picturesque, the way we are sometimes pictured. However, if you'd like to see how we proceed upon a case, I'll ask you to step inside our Black Museum and meet the man in charge of it. Come in. This is Chief Inspector John Davidson, who's in charge here.
Well, how do you do? I'm afraid that the so-called Black Museum is neither black nor a museum, nor is it the Grand Guignol. We have here a large number of guns, knives, other weapons which have been used in crimes. We have also disguises, clothing, exhibits of all sorts that have helped in solving many of these crimes.
I think you ought to explain, John, why we keep these gruesome relics.
Yes, indeed. They're here for a purpose quite removed from idle curiosity. They're principally for the use of the men of Scotland Yard in studying crime techniques and exemplars of crime methods. They bring to life the cold words contained in our files and the most useful as well as graphic. For example, in this case, Superintendent Watkins is reenacting for you. Now, this is a bullet that killed a man. It was fired from this gun. 32 caliber Waltham automatic pistol. And it was Scotland Yard's job to prove that. And this, the top of an ordinary mechanical pencil. This is a very important bit of evidence. Just a cheap little metal pencil.
It wasn't cheap for the man who lost it, John.
It cost him his life, you see.
We were standing in the corner of a saloon bar in Whitechapel, talking. Albert Stevens, the copper's narc, and me. I expect you don't know what a narc is. N-A-R-K. In America, I think you call him a stool pigeon. Every detective in the world has his pet narc, and Albert Stevens was mine. It was an insignificant place we were in, and Albert Stevens, too mild and bitters, had set him talking 16 to the dozen.
I don't suppose you'd know him by sight, sir, but I could tell you how to find him. That is, I've seen him about here and there. It's American cigarettes they're handing now, but they ain't got many left. And when they're sold out of them, they'll try something else.
Have you got any ideas, Albert?
No, sir, not yet. But it'll be something big, I'm sure of that.
Do they know you, do you suppose?
Nobody notices a taxi driver, sir. They've rode in my cab twice now, and they've never even looked at my face. But I've looked at them.
Will you have another mild and bitter, Albert?
Well, I wouldn't say no, sir. Here, miss, fill this up here, will you, again? Will you? Thank you. They're some kind of foreigners, that they are. Thank you, miss. This I know. They're in the black market up to here.
You said that. What kind of foreigners?
I can't understand them much, except when they talk about, well, what they think is English. Greeks or Spaniards or Russians, I think. All three of them. Oh, they tip quite nice, too.
But you're sure they're in the black market?
No doubt about it, sir. I hear enough about it.
Don't know their names.
Well, one is called Marion.
Marion?
And the other's name is Kashmir. Kashmir. Maybe he's an Hindu. And the other is a gentleman in some kind of navy, sir. Not ours. Some foreign navy. He wears a uniform.
Who seems to be the boss?
Well, I'd say this year Kashmir is, sir. He's an odd man, he is, sir.
Is that all you know about them, then?
That's all I know right now, sir. Well, ain't that worth 3 pints of mild and bitter, sir?
Just about, Albert.
Well, I was sort of hoping you'd have a spare 10-shilling note on you, sir.
I have, Albert, but not for you, my lad. When you've something better than a comic trio of foreigners who gibber about American cigarettes, maybe, but not till then.
Would you like to buy a magnificent new solid gold mechanical pencil, sir? Yeah. A sacrifice for 10 shillings.
Where'd you get it?
A lady gave it to me, sir. Now, what say? Say 7 and 6 to you, sir.
Come now, Albert. You know that's worth all of 9 pence.
9 pence, then, sir? I need the money.
Come off it, Albert.
Well, then, sir. What did you say if I told you these foreign blokes is murderers?
Shouldn't believe a word of it.
Oh, they might be, sir.
Well, when you can prove it, come round and see me, Albert.
Well, don't I get another pint, sir?
Here, miss. Another of the same for my friend here. Night, Albert. Scotland Yard next morning. I walked leisurely down the long corridor on the second floor that leads to my office. A voice hailed me as I opened the door to my office, and I looked back. It was Detective Sergeant Llewellyn, a Welshman who had been a constable at the Water Street Police Station when I was a sergeant. Here was a welcome face. David, I said, I've not seen you in 6 months.
Longer than that indeed, Superintendent. It's 10 months, and I'm very glad to be seeing you.
Where have you been?
To the Army all this time, sir. I was seconded to MI5.
Yes, I heard
it
that.
It was tiresome work, but now I'm back. Thanks indeed to the Lord.
Taking a well-earned rest, I expect.
Oh, indeed, to goodness, no. There's no rest for the wicked. I'm on a case already.
Can we have dinner this evening, then?
I'm not so sure, sir.
What have they given you?
Oh, a murder.
Good bloody one?
I've just seen the man. He's bloody enough, indeed. They found him shot to death in his car early this morning.
Where?
Chepstow Place, Notting Hill. The constable who found him in his car parked beside the curb thought he was taken with drink and sound asleep. But it was a .32 caliber bullet in the back of his neck and out the front of his head. Very gory.
Know who he was?
A foreigner, it seems, with the name of Kashmir Kasuba.
Oh.
Whatever's the matter, then? Do you know him?
Come on in my room here. I don't know the chap, but I have an idea I know someone who does.
Well, indeed, to goodness.
Come on in. Come on in while I telephone. I've got his number in my book here. At least a number where I can reach him. Ah, here it is.
Whoever is he, Superintendent?
Chap named Albert Stevens, a narc. Talking to him just last night. Mentioned a chap named Kashmir, he called him. Foreigner. That might be. Now, where is the beggar? Every little bit.
Cass, who is it?
Oh, hello. Is Albert there? Albert Stevens?
Yes, yeah, been home since yesterday morning. Who wants him?
When he comes in, tell him to telephone Watkins. Watkins, got that?
Hoskins?
Watkins. Watkins. He knows me.
What do you want?
Just tell him to call me, that's all.
Does he know where to call?
Yes, it's very important. Do you understand?
He ain't come home since yesterday morning.
All right, have him telephone me at once.
Mr. Bloody Will Watkins.
Goodbye. Not there. No, telephone me. I say, where can I reach you?
Oh, I've got all this report on the man to write up, for goodness sake. I'll be in my office till noon.
Oh, he'll telephone me before that, I'm sure.
Well, I must be going, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry I couldn't reach him just now. But I'll be in touch with you as soon as I hear from him.
I'll be very grateful to you, sir. It was good seeing you again.
Been a long time, Llewellyn. Well, goodbye.
So long.
So long, old chap. Oh, you dropped something.
Eh? Where?
There on the floor, beside your right foot.
Oh, must have followed this.
What is it?
Found it in the car with the dead man.
Huh?
A top off a cheap mechanical pencil.
Let's see it. Do you mind?
Not at all. But don't have to be careful of fingerprints. They've had it in the laboratory. Nothing on it.
That's it.
Beg your pardon, sir?
I've seen this pencil before, Lou.
Oh, millions of them about, no doubt. The chap that was killed must have lost it.
No.
Eh?
I've seen this particular one before. I saw it last night.
I don't follow you, sir.
That settles it. Look here, closely.
Yes?
See these initials scratched on it? Very tiny, yeah. Probably done with a pocket knife. See it? A.S.
By crikey, A.S., that's what they are. Whose do you suppose?
He offered to sell it to me last night.
Who?
Albert Stevens, the copper's narc. I was just trying to telephone.
Goodness sake.
So that's why he hasn't come home.
Eh?
He said he knew this Casimir. He said Casimir had money. And money was what he needed.
Well, Casimir was robbed, we know that. But I never knew a copper's narc to have the courage to commit murder, sir.
Why, I bought him the courage, old boy. 4 pints of mild and bitter. Suppose that makes me an accessory to murder?
The constables who were dispatched to the home of Albert Stevens reported that he was still absent. At 11 the next morning, he had not yet come home. His wife knew nothing of his whereabouts, nor did the garage people, where he usually kept his cab. At noon, a teletype signal was sent to all metropolitan police stations giving a description of the man and the number of his cab, GLP-301. The same information was published next day in Metropolitan Informations, which goes to all police officers. There was no immediate response. Neither the man nor the cab could be found. By now, Superintendent Watkins had been officially assigned to the case, and on the morning of the fourth day, we held a strategy meeting in his office. He had some new information for me.
They found the gun.
Indeed, sir.
They've been taking the car to pieces down at Hendon for us, you know. They found a .32 caliber Walther automatic pistol hidden in the lining of the top.
Good.
Our friend Casimir was killed by a .32 caliber bullet, you know. And ballistics assures me that this is the gun from which it was fired.
Good. Fingerprints?
What?
Fingerprints.
None. The ballistics say they're sure that more than one shot was fired from the gun.
How could they tell that?
There are two cartridges missing from the clip. And it seems they found too much powder fouling in the receiver and the barrel for one shot. I don't quite understand, but they're quite positive.
They find more than one bullet?
Only the one that went through Casimir's head. It was embedded in the dash of the car.
Where's this other one, then?
Somebody else's body, I expect.
Hmm.
That whose, I say?
Yes.
Oh, blast. Superintendent Watkins, him.
Hi, Watkins. Fletcher here, T Division.
Hello, sailor.
Again, we found your man, Albert Stevens.
Oh, good. Found him.
Oh.
Where was he?
Sitting in his taxi cab.
Where?
At the bottom of the Thames.
What?
Near Wapping Old Stairs. One of our boats found him.
Is he dead?
Twice dead, old chap. Drowned and a bullet through his heart.
Well, so that's where the other bullet went. I admit I'd more or less dropped a brick in pinning all my hopes of a quick solution of the case on Albert Stevens. Llewellyn and I moved at once to realign our strategy. This was our estimate of the situation.
It is possible that Stevens did murder Casimir, of course.
Possible, but not probable.
The forensic laboratory people, the ballistics people, say that the bullet they found in Stevens' body was fired from the same gun that killed Casimir.
The .32 Walther automatic they found in the car.
But then, who killed who?
I suspect that since the gun was found in the car with Casimir, he was the last one shot, wouldn't you?
Well, then, of course, Stevens couldn't have killed him.
Right. Stevens must have been dead and at the bottom of the Thames when Casimir was shot.
Then, who killed Casimir? Obviously not Stevens.
The forensic laboratory can tell us who died first, I hope.
We know.
How?
The gun. It was with Casimir, remember? Unless someone shot him, then took the gun and killed Stevens with it, pushed him into the Thames, and then brought the gun back.
Sounds silly.
Indeed.
Then who shot Casimir?
One of Stevens' friends might have, if he knew Casimir killed Stevens. Revenge.
How do we know Casimir shot Stevens?
Well, we...
Besides, Stevens didn't have any friends. Except me. I don't think I did it.
His wife, perhaps?
Yeah. Perhaps. Well, besides, how could she get that gun?
No friends.
None I know of. I knew Albert rather well. Huh.
What?
Casimir had friends, though. Albert told me about them.
Who?
A man named, woman's name, Marion.
I don't know him.
And a man who wears a foreign Navy uniform.
Polish? Casimir was Polish, and a deserter.
I suspect our man's a deserter, too. They were all mixed up in the black market, Albert said.
What sort of black market, sir?
Oh, all sorts, it appears.
Why should they kill Casimir? And, or Albert Stevens?
Well, Albert, that's simple. They found out he was an informer, a narc.
Why Casimir?
Oh, people had been murdered for money before. Perhaps Casimir was cheating them. He was apparently the boss.
Well, a crook who cheats a fellow crook is asking for it.
Let's get on to Marion and the Navy officer.
All we have to do is find them.
Now, allow me to digress for a moment. There was, of course, no record anywhere of Casimir's former address. We put people on that at once, suspecting that Marion and the Navy officer might live close to Casimir's home. But another day dragged by without tangible result. I was sitting gloomily in my office, trying to think of a more tenable theory than the one we had tentatively adopted. Oh, blast the phone. Yes, Watkins here.
Ready to see you, sir. Inspector.
What's her name?
Name, please.
Miss Dottie Telfer.
Spell it, please.
T-A-L-I-A-F-E-R-R-O. You've heard of me. I'm the actress.
Miss Dottie Telfer, sir. And...
Actress. You know me.
Actress, sir.
What's she want?
She says it's in connection with Casimir... What was her name, miss?
Kashubert, I said.
I heard her.
Yes, sir.
Send her in.
Yes, sir.
And ask Sergeant Llewellyn if you'll just step in here.
Yes, sir.
Come in. Good afternoon, madam.
Are you Superintendent Watkins?
I am. Sit down, madam.
I thank you.
You said you knew something about Casimir Kashubert.
Yeah, I saw in the express that he's dead.
Extremely.
And good enough for him, I'd say.
You knew him?
He was a crook.
I'm afraid you're rather late in telling us that, madam.
Well, I mean to say, I...
What sort of dealings did you have with him?
Well, I never had any. Well, I mean, he cheated me, and now he's dead. How am I going to get back the £17 I gave him? That's what I want to know.
Why did you give him £17?
Oh, excuse me, sir.
Come on in, Llewellyn. This is Miss Dottie...
Yes, sir. I'm a music hall star at the Shepherd's Bush Empire.
How do you do, madam?
Sit down, Llewellyn. Seems Miss Telfer has given Casimir £17.
Whatever for, miss?
Well, it was rather silly of me, but I couldn't resist it.
Resist what?
Well, I was having a late supper after the show last Tuesday, and there was a man, Casimir Kashubert, it turned out to be, sitting two tables away from me.
Was that the first time you met him?
Of course. Do you think that... On the table before him was the most magnificent handbag.
Handbag?
A woman's handbag. The kind I hadn't seen for simply years. I couldn't resist doing what I did.
What did you do, madam?
Oh, I know it's breaking the law, but isn't everyone in the black market?
Not everyone exactly.
Oh, well... I just stepped over to the table and introduced myself, and he gave me his name, and I said, would you mind terribly telling me where you got that adorable bag? I wanted one myself, you know.
Black market.
So he said he manufactured them and that I could have one if I liked. All I had to do was to give him £17 so that he could buy the special leather it was made of. And in a day or two, I could call at his flat and it would be ready for me, do you see?
And you fell for that old one?
You called at his flat?
Would you believe it? When I called, he professed never having seen me. He said he was not a manufacturer.
He wasn't.
And nothing I could say would make him give me back my £17 or the bag.
And did you kill him then?
I did not.
Later, perhaps.
I never killed anyone in my life. I'm a law-abiding...
Will you give us the address, my dear law-abiding young woman?
Well, it's in Maida Vale somewhere. I think I have it here, in my shabby old handbag.
Thank you very much, Miss...
Telfer,
an actress, I think you said, yes. Well, that'll be all, Miss Telfer, and thank you very much. Come along, Llewellyn.
Yes, but how am I going to get my £17 back? The man's dead.
You're
now.
Not going to get it back, Miss Telfer.
What?
You're very fortunate. The black markets cost you only £17. It cost Casimir his life. Ready, Llewellyn?
Within 20 minutes, a Scotland Yard car dropped us at the address in Maida Vale Miss Telfer, actress, had supplied us. We interviewed the proprietor of that dismal place, a cross-eyed young man in an unusually dirty waistcoat in the red Minges tartan. His name, he informed us, was Ian Kalbfleisch, and he had a cold.
Well, he ain't here. We're quite aware of that, my good man. He's dead.
Did you murder him?
No. Are you in the black market, too? No.
May we see his room?
Say this anymore. Whose is it, then? Another man.
Who?
An officer. Navy officer.
Oh? RN? RNR? Or RNVR?
Not one of ours. Polish Navy.
When did this Polish naval officer take the room, Mr. Kalbfleisch?
Day after the murder.
Oh, you know the day of the murder, then?
I can read. Was it all the papers?
Is this man here now?
No.
Will he return?
He always has.
Was this naval officer a friend of Casimir's?
I don't know.
May we see the room?
Got a warrant?
Yes.
All right. Second door on the left.
Come on, Lou.
All right.
It's unlocked.
Come on. No, leave the door open, Lou. Our friend with a runny nose might just warn him that we're here.
Right. I'll keep watch.
While Llewellyn kept watch from the open door, I made a quick search of the place. I found nothing at all of any apparent importance until I went for the pockets of the navy greatcoat in the closet. I was about to exhibit my findings to Llewellyn when he hissed sharply at me from the doorway. What's up?
Chap coming in, wearing a navy uniform.
People in your room, Commander. Who are they? For me. Scotland Yard. What do they want?
If you'll come in, Commander, we'll be glad to tell you.
Who are you?
Sergeant Llewellyn of Scotland Yard. I think you'd best come in, sir. Come in, sir.
What is the meaning of this, may I ask?
What is your name, please?
Leo M. Stefanowitz, Commander of Polish Navy. What do you want?
I should like to ask you a question.
Well?
May I ask you where you got this mechanical pencil, sir?
I will tell you. I got it,
Well, where did you get it?
I didn't kill him.
Kill whom, Commander?
Why, Casimir Kashuba.
This was Albert Stevens' pencil, Commander.
I didn't kill Albert.
The top of this pencil was found in the car with Casimir Kashuba's body, Commander.
I didn't do it.
Perhaps you can explain, then.
Yes, I...
Well?
Marion did the killing.
Oh, indeed, Marion.
Yes, I told him not. It was Marion who did it, not me.
Oh, our friend Marion, he did it.
Yes, I am telling you the truth. Marion.
You know where Marion is?
I will take it to him. Yes, I will help you. He did it, and I will help you find him. Please,
and
let
my
me
please,
take you to him.
Please.
Will you please? Casimir was my friend.
I'm just wondering something, Inspector.
Eh?
I am wondering if Albert Stevens was also his friend.
Let's go and find your friend Marion, shall we, Commander?
It was a quiet little hotel we drove to in the West End. Inspector Watkins and me and the commander all jammed in the police car together. The clerk nodded in a familiar way to Stefanovitz when we entered.
Is my friend in?
Yes, sir.
Oh, don't announce us, please. We will work the lift ourselves. Get in, gentlemen.
All right.
Now we shall see justice done.
Indeed.
The first floor, gentlemen. The door directly opposite. Here.
Who is he?
Leo, Marion.
Who is with you?
No one.
Come in. Ah, Leo, my boy, I am glad.
We are from Scotland Yard, sir. I warn you, both of you, that anything you say will be taken down in writing and may be used in evidence.
What is the meaning of you, murderer?
What?
Yes, these gentlemen have come to arrest you for the murder of Casimir.
Sacre, you traitor, you coward.
Arrest him, gentlemen. He is the murderer.
You look, this man. He's the one who fired shot.
Huh?
He's the one who did it. I see him do it.
You see me? You know you did it. He's the one,
gentlemen. I'm not. He should catch me from behind as I sit in front seat.
I was in a front seat. He did it.
Sacre.
Oh, tag. Sacre, if you serve, Marion. You murderer. You thief.
Gentlemen. Marion Konechny and Leo Stefanovitz. I arrest you both on suspicion of having been involved in the murder of Casimir Kasuba and of Albert Stephen. You've both been warned. Have you nothing to say? At the trial, the two men admitted all the details of the two murders. Albert Stevens, it seems, had talked too much about his relations with the police, and someone in a moment of rage had shot him and his cab had been dumped into the Thames. Walking away from there together, they'd stolen a motor car. Casimir Kasuba, who had been drinking heavily, twitted his companions about the new hold he had on them as murderers. He boasted that he had had no part in the crime, and one of the two men had shot him in the back of the neck with a Walther automatic pistol. Each man blamed the other. The jury took 25 minutes to decide who was guilty. Mr. Justice McConaughey placed the black cap on his head.
Marion Konechny, Leo Stavarovich, the jury have found you and each of you guilty of the murder of Casimir Kasuba. It is the sentence of the court that you and each of you be taken to a lawful prison and fetched to a place of execution. That you be there, each of you, hanged by the neck until you are dead. Let your honors respectfully...
The two men appealed the verdict and won. They were immediately tried for the murder of Albert Stevens and again heard the fatal words.
That you there, each of you, be hanged by the neck until you are dead.
The latter sentence was carried out.
You have heard the eighth in the series Whitehall 1212, compiled by special permission from the official files of Scotland Yard. Only the names have been changed. Otherwise, the story is true. Research for Whitehall 1212 is prepared by Percy Hoskins of the London Daily Express, and the stories for radio are written and directed by Willis Cooper and produced by Jack Goldstein and Collie Small. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. There's adventure zooming your way today with Joel McRae featured in another authentic story based on the files of the Texas Rangers.
History of crime detection has produced no more famous name than that of Sexton Blake. We we present William Franklin of Sexton Blake, with David Gregory as his assistant tinker and Heather Chayton as his secretary, Paula Dane, in a new series of case histories by Donald Stewart. And the first one is called Lilies for the Ladies.
Tuck over the toast, Governor. Can I have the toast, please?
Eh? Yes, of course. Here you are.
Thanks. What's our interest in the paper?
Beatrice Linfield.
Not married again, surely?
No, she's dead. She was strangled in a flat in Clarges Street yesterday evening.
I bet her husband did it.
You'd lose. He was in Cannes. Give me some more coffee, will you?
He's the seventh husband, isn't he?
Something like that. The marriage wasn't a great success.
None of them were.
No, she was unlucky. Too many dollars, too used to her own way, too neurotic. Very difficult to live with.
Why are you so interested, Governor?
Beatrice Linfield makes the fourth in the last 2 years.
The fourth?
Pamela Mortimer, Marigold Bradley, Edith Woodthorpe. All the same type, middle-aged, rich, much married, and all murdered. The only apparent motive in each case was the husband's. He got the cash, but like Linfield, had a cast-iron alibi.
You're not suggesting that these four murders were organized?
I'm not suggesting anything. In each case I've mentioned, the husband, the most likely suspect, was provided with an unshakable alibi. In this case, Henry Linfield was in Cannes attending a public dinner at the very time his wife was strangled.
What time was that?
7 o'clock in the evening.
Mrs. Linfield was alone in the flat?
From 6 o'clock onwards. The murder mightn't have been discovered until the servants came back, but somebody thoughtfully rang up the police.
Rang up the police?
Yes, just said that a woman was dead and gave the address. Somebody wanted to make sure that the discovery was made while Henry Linfield was still at that dinner in Cannes.
Well, that fits in with your idea, I'll admit, Governor, but surely it's all a bit way out.
Men who marry these rich women are mostly after the money, Tinker.
But that doesn't mean they'd listen to a proposition to murder them. If anybody suggested it, he'd be taking a heck of a risk. Supposing the husband refused to play?
In the case of the four dead women, the husband's obviously didn't, if my supposition is correct.
Well, you may be right, Governor, but I can't see it. How does this organisation go about it? Wires removed with curses in dispatch, excellent references, terms moderate, estimate free, send for illustrated brochure.
It doesn't have to be quite as crude as that. A slightly cryptic advertisement in one of the dailies can produce that kind of service.
Well, these women weren't all strangled, were they?
Oh, no, that would have linked them a bit too obviously. I expect the police have spotted the possibility of a connection. And just at the moment, we've got quite enough on our own plate without...
Mr. Sexton Blake's residence? No, this is his assistant speaking. Who did you say? Well, if you hold on, I'll see. Henry Linfield wants to speak to you, Governor.
Henry Linfield? Where's he calling from?
Well, London Airport. He sounded a bit of a flap.
Give me the phone. Sexton Blake speaking. Yes, I know. I've just seen it in the paper. I see. When? Very well, I'll expect you. Yes. Goodbye.
What does he want?
Advice. He's coming straight here from the airport.
Before he sees the police?
I think that's rather the point. He's flown in on an earlier flight. They don't expect him yet. Interesting, eh?
Did he sound to you in the flap?
He sounded very tense. It looks as if we might have to make some extra room on that plate after all.
Will you check this report, Mr. Blake? I've done three carbons.
Oh, thanks, Paula. I'll run through them. Have you been through to Chief Inspector Coots?
I can't get him. He's not at the yard.
Did you try the flat in Clarges Street?
Yes, he's not there either. Sergeant Bates doesn't know where he's gone.
Good old Coots. I bet he's tackling the job with the energy of a bulldozer gone berserk.
Don't underestimate Coots, Tinker. He lacks imagination, but he's a very sound man.
I'll try the yard again.
Keep on trying, Paula.
Linfield hasn't turned up, has he? He's had loads of time to get here from the airport. It's over 3 hours since he rang up.
The police may have been waiting at the airport in spite of that earlier flight. He'd have to deal with them first.
There he is now.
Will you see him right away?
Yes, shoot him in.
Getting impatient, isn't he?
Oh, good morning. Can you tell me if Mr. Linfield is here?
Who's that?
I believe Mr. Blake is expecting him. He isn't here yet. Would you like to see Mr. Blake?
Yes, I would, please.
What name shall I say?
Carr. Iris Carr.
Well, if you'll just wait in my office... I'll see if Mr. Blake can see you. Did you hear that, Mr. Blake?
Yes, bring her in, Paula.
What's she like?
Young, smartly dressed, very pretty.
I wonder what she wants, Governor.
Henry Linfield, apparently.
Mr. Blake will see you.
Oh, thank you.
Miss Carr, Mr. Blake.
Sit down, Miss Carr. You expected to find Mr. Linfield here?
Yes. He told me he was coming to see you when he phoned me.
He phoned this morning?
Yes, early, just after 8, from London Airport. He said he was calling in to see me at the flat on his way here. When he didn't turn up, I thought I'd come round here and see what had happened. I was getting worried.
Why?
Well, you know about his wife.
Did you know her, Miss Carr?
No. No, I didn't. It was a terrible shock when I heard that
You heard? You didn't read about it in the newspaper?
No, Harry, Mr. Linfield told me when he rang up this morning.
I see. Well, I can understand it being a shock, but why were you worried? Did you think that Mr. Linfield had anything to do with it?
No, of course not. Well, how could he? He was in Cannes.
So why were you worried? Because he didn't turn up at your flat?
Well, yes, I suppose that was it. What can have happened to him? Where is he?
Probably helping the police with their inquiries. Do you know why he was coming to see me?
No, he didn't tell me.
Did he sound at all agitated when he phoned you?
Yes, very. I thought he was scared.
Do you know of any reason why he should be?
No, but that's how he sounded. Afraid.
Excuse me. Yes, Paula?
I've got Chief Inspector Coots on the line.
Now, put him through, will you? Blake here, Coots. We've been trying to get you. Yes, I know. What? Where was this? I see. Where are you now? The yard, good. Do you mind if I come and see you? Yes. I'll explain then. Well, it might. No. So long, then. With you soon. Paula?
Yes, Mr. Blake?
I'm sending Miss Carr along to your office. Will you look after her? Give her some coffee. You know the way to my secretary's office, Miss Carr. Tinker and I have to go out, but I want you to stay here till we get back. We shan't be long.
But supposing Mr. Linfield
Just
comes...
Just leave everything to my secretary.
Oh, very well.
What's all that in, eh, Doctor?
I didn't want to say anything in front of the girl. Henry Linfield won't be coming. He's dead.
Dead?
Stabbed to death in a public call box at London Airport.
That's all, Blake. A man went to make a call. Found Linfield huddled on the floor of the call box. Gave the alarm to the airport police. They told our man who'd gone to meet the plane. He phoned me.
You saw the body?
Straight away. Heard you'd been trying to get me when I got back.
What time was he found?
8:20 this morning. I was at Clarges Street. He was stabbed in the back. Died almost at once, but not quite. Scrawled the word Sam in the dust.
Sam?
Mean anything to you?
No. Linfield phoned me to ask if he could see me. Conversation was brief and to the point. He gave no information.
Look here, Blake. How do you come into this? You say Linfield phoned you?
Yes, but I don't know why he wanted to see me.
Perhaps he knew who killed his wife. Damn queer business.
Like Pamela Mortimer, Marigold Bradley, and Edith Woodthorpe, eh?
Funny you should say that. I've been thinking the same.
No motives, husbands with cast-iron alibis. All very neat and slick, Coots. Too neat and slick.
Agreed. Husbands the only ones to benefit, but none of them within miles of the victims. Witnesses to prove it.
Extremely well organized, eh?
Now, what are you getting at, Blake? Now, who'd be fool enough to commit murder to benefit somebody else?
Someone who was getting a large slice of the profit.
Oh, come now. Might be possible in one case, but not in four. Can you see anybody saying to a chap, how much will you pay me if I bump off your wife so that you come into the money?
Not very feasible, is it?
I'd say it was rubbish. Nobody'd stick their neck out that far.
It mightn't have been done like that.
Any idea how it could have been done?
Somebody was afraid that Linfield might tell us.
Such as Sam?
I suppose you're checking up to see if he knew anyone named Sam.
Got it in hand. Checking up the servants, too. Think they're all right, but got to make sure.
By the way, how did the murderer get into the flat?
Now, Mrs. Linfield must have let him in. No sign of a forced entry.
Or he had a key. Where was she when she was killed?
Well, the telly was on. Suppose she must have been watching it. Didn't put up much of a fight. Half tight, if you ask me. Reeked of gin.
Chief Inspector Coote? Oh, yes, sir. Now? Very good, sir.
AC wants me. VIP, Mrs. Linfield was. American citizen before her marriage to Linfield. Hamburger heiress. Dollars galore.
Well, I'll be off. Oh, just one thing. I'd like the official files on those other women.
Well, I wasn't on those cases, Blake, but I'll have them sent round.
Thanks.
If you turn anything up...
I'll let you know. Goodbye for now. Don't let the commissioner get you down.
I won't.
I'm all right now.
Sure.
Quite sure. I'm sorry I was so silly.
you mind if I ask you some questions?
About Harry?
How long have you been friends?
About 18 months. I used to model for Maison La Roche. Mrs. Linfield bought a lot of her dresses there, and Harry came with her sometimes. That's how I met him.
I see.
He was very unhappy. Mrs. Linfield wasn't a nice woman. She drank quite a lot. She used to have fits of temper and rave at him.
So he spent as much time as he could with you?
Yes.
Mrs. Linfield had no idea.
No.
Did he talk to you about his friends, people he knew?
Sometimes. He had to meet a lot of people. Mrs. Linfield entertained a good bit, you see.
Did he ever mention anyone named Sam?
Sam? No, I don't think so. No, I'm sure he didn't.
Well, thank you, Miss Carr. Now you'd better go home. I'll get Tinker, my assistant, to drive you
no,
there.
No, please don't bother, Mr. Blake. I can get a taxi. I feel quite all right now.
Please, I kept you here. The least I can do is to make sure that you get home safely. Tinker?
Coming, Governor.
One last question before you go, Miss Carr. Have you any idea who arranged this trip to Cannes? Was it Mr. Linfield's wife, by any chance?
Oh, no, it wasn't Mrs. Linfield. I believe it had something to do with the Samaritan Club.
What did you...
Just a minute, Tinker. Did you say the Samaritan Club, Miss Carr?
Yes.
What is the Samaritan Club?
Well, I don't really know. Harry mentioned it once, but I don't know anything about it.
Thank you, Miss Carr. Tinker, take Miss Carr home to her flat, will you?
With pleasure.
You've been very kind, Mr.
Oh, nonsense. Look after yourself and don't worry too much. Ask Paula to come in, Tinker, as you go out.
Okay, Governor. Come along, Miss Carr.
You want me?
I want all the information you can get me about a place called the Samaritan Club, Paula.
What sort of club is it?
I can't tell you. I know nothing about it except the name. But I believe Henry Linfield was starting to scrawl the name in the dust on the floor of that call box and died before he could finish it.
Sorry I've been so long, Governor. I hope you didn't want me for anything.
It would have been all the same if I had. What have you been up to?
Well, our maid Iris have a meal. She hadn't eaten anything at all. Didn't even have any breakfast. I felt sorry for the kid.
Remarkable how deeply you always sympathize with a pretty girl, Tinker. The more attractive she is, the deeper your sympathy.
We only talked about Henry Linfield, so don't get any ideas, Governor. She was nuts about him. She's a right little Annie.
If you can detach your mind from beauty and distress for a moment, I've got a job for you.
What is it?
The Samaritan Club. Paula's got some gin on it, but I could do with some more. A lot more.
Where is this place?
In Hartford Street. It's run by a man with the unlikely name of Montague Glasspool. It's a membership club, very exclusive from what I can gather. And the membership is limited.
Linfield was a member, was he?
I'm pretty sure of it. Extremely expensive.
Well, Iris says that Linfield never had any money. His wife kept him short of cash. She paid all the bills, but was mean with the spending money.
Oh, that's interesting. Go along and see what you can find out about this place. Pick up all the gossip you can. I doubt if you'll get any information from the people connected with the club, but people in the immediate neighborhood may talk.
I'll do my best, Governor.
And take care, Tinker. Keep your eyes skinned. Henry Linfield didn't stab himself.
I remember when all these here houses belonged to the gentry. Townhouses, they called them. Used to work as a boot boy at one of them, I did. Now look at them. Officers. And these here clubs. And the gambling.
The Samaritan Club looks a posh sort of place.
What used to be Lord Larkin's place? Oh, used to run errands for him, I did. Had a nifty little piece for a housemaid, he did. Cool.
And now you work for Montague Glasspool, eh?
That's right. Cool, what a difference. Thinks he's class, but he ain't. Wouldn't have got near Hartford Street in the old days. Well, here's luck.
Cheers. Glasspool lives in the club, doesn't he?
He got a flat on the top floor, where the servants used to sleep. That little housemaid I was telling you about, she slept in the room he used as a bathroom. Used to call me Ginger, she did. Cut him here. I ain't got none now.
You know most of the members, I suppose.
Oh, I know them all. There ain't a lot, you know. His nibs is a bit choosy. Well, he's got to be, ain't he? I mean, no good if they're short on the sausage and mash.
Lose a lot of money, do they?
Sometimes. But sometimes they wins a packet.
Do you ever have any trouble? Dub checks, anything like that?
Oh, we don't have that sort. Hand-picked our members is. Very strict, his nibs is. You'll be surprised at the number of applications what gets turned down.
Did you know a chap named Linfield? Henry Linfield?
That was the bloke whose wife got bumped over. Yeah. How did you know he was a member?
It was in the papers, wasn't it?
What's your game, eh? Asking all these here questions.
Well, just a matter of interest.
You get yourself interested in something else, see? I ain't supposed to talk about our members. Not to no one. I ain't, no.
Sorry, I didn't mean to speak out of turn. If I was a bit nosy, it was because I was wondering if there was any chance of a job.
But it's the matter, then. Not a ruddy hope. Same not if it was there when it opened.
Still, I suppose there wouldn't be any harm in me seeing Mr. Glossball and asking.
You'll be lucky. Like blinking royalty, isn't it, Mrs.? You won't see no one. Well, I must be off.
Oh, have another pint before you go.
No, I ain't got no time. Got to change into my uniform, see? It'll take me 5 minutes to get to the club. Much as my job's worth to be late.
I was in the saloon bar near the glass partition. Couldn't help overhearing your conversation with Ginger, so I thought I'd come round. You seem to be very interested in the Samaritan Club.
Any law against being interested?
None. As long as it doesn't become extreme. Tell me, why are you interested?
That's my business.
And mine. Let me introduce myself. I'm Montague Glasspool. I don't know who you are or what you think you're after, but I'm warning you. I'm allergic to snoopers. Good evening.
About Henry Linfield that made him suspicious, Tinker.
I could have kicked myself for that. Old Ginger spotted it and went all cagey.
It was a mistake. There's been nothing to connect Linfield with the Samaritan Club. What's this man Glasspool like to look at?
Hefty brute, but a bit flabby. Large tummy and a nose to match. Veneer a polish, but not very deep. Ginger's description was bang on. I hope for the old boy's sake Glasspool didn't hear that bit.
He's the doorman of the club, isn't he?
Yeah. It must be over 70. I made several inquiries before I got the Ginger. The Samaritan seems a very respectable, very expensive, and very exclusive. Gambling's the chief attraction, but there's a restaurant and a bar. For the use of members, of course.
Any women members?
No, gents only. Not very helpful, eh?
I don't know. I've got an idea niggling at the back of my mind, but even if I'm right, it's going to be very difficult to prove.
Well, let's hear it, Governor.
Not yet, Tinker.
Oh, thank goodness that's over.
Oh, didn't you have a good time, Paula?
A good time? Give me strength.
Where have you been?
You've been having dinner with Percival Falconbridge Fuchs. Two small Fs. He knows everybody who's anybody in the West End and exists like one of the lilies of the field.
Well, I'm glad to say that the evening cost you £20 and the price of the dinner.
Well, I hope you had a good one.
Considering I was paying the bill, I made certain of that.
You look charming, Paula. Quite a dish.
Well, it didn't stir any response in the breast of that tadpole.
The only thing that stirs any response in the breast of Mr. Falconbridge Fuchs is the welfare of Mr. Falconbridge Fuchs. Did you get anything?
Yes, I think so. Edward Mortimer, Charles Bradley, and James Woodthorpe are all members of the Samaritan Club. And so was Henry Linfield. That's what you wanted to know, isn't it?
It is indeed. You've done extremely well, Paula.
At the expense of the most boring evening I've ever spent.
I should have thought you would have found Percival Falconbridge Fuchs a charming companion. His manners are impeccable.
A mentally retarded Prince Charming. Can I go home now? I'm exhausted.
Yes, Paula, and thanks very much.
Oh, don't worry. I shall charge you overtime. Good night. See you both in the morning.
Is this chap as bad as Paula makes out?
On the whole, yes, but he gets around, knows everybody, goes everywhere, at someone else's expense. I've used him before, but his information's reliable.
So all the husbands of the dead women were members of the Samaritan Club?
Significant, eh?
Meaning that Montague Glasspool is the chap behind the murders.
In a way, yes. It's not really quite as easy as that.
Well, I wouldn't call any of it easy. But I suppose you know best.
That's just the trouble. I don't. I wish I did.
Well, anyway, what do we do next?
You can work this one out if you like. Take 5 from 3.
Well, you can't take 5 from 3, Governor.
Annoying, isn't it? Well, I'm going to bed. Tomorrow looks like being quite a day.
Got most of the dope you wanted, Blake. It took a bit of doing in the time.
Thanks, Coot. It needed to be done officially, or we could have handled it. What's the verdict on Glasspool?
What you'd expect. Been in all kinds of deals. Some paid off, some didn't. No record. Never been in trouble. One thing, though, he was on the verge of going bankrupt just after he opened the Samaritan Club.
Ah, that's what I'm interested in.
I thought you might be. Got out of it somehow. No information how.
There wouldn't be.
Began to make money. Loads of it. The bank, a bit cagey, disclosing information. Got hold of a chap in the Inland Revenue. He did the trick.
And the result?
Glasspool's rolling in it. Nearly a millionaire. Ties up, eh?
Quite tightly, Coos.
I can't do anything. No proof.
I might be able to supply that.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to the Samaritan Club. I want to have a little talk with Mr. Montague Glasspool.
Good evening, sir. Only members are allowed in the club.
I have an appointment with Mr. Montague Glasspool. My name is Sexton Blake.
Overtake, sir. I'll get onto the house phone.
Thank you.
I've got a gentleman here, sir. Name of Sexton Blake. What said he's got an appointment. Yes. All right, sir. Will you go up, sir? Lift just round that corner. Top floor, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I don't know what this is all about. You'd better come in.
Here you are. Now, I can spare you 5 minutes.
You'll spare me as long as I require, Mr. Glasspool.
What? I don't like your tone.
You'll like it even less as time goes on.
What the hell do you mean? I agreed to see you because
I told you that Linfield had talked and you were scared.
Rubbish. What have I got to be scared about? Who did he talk to and what about?
He had a girlfriend, Iris Carr. He talked to her.
When?
London Airport, after he arrived back from Cannes.
But there wasn't time.
Go on, Glasspool. You were going to say there wasn't time before he died.
You're mad. Get out of my flat.
Where shall I go? To the police? They'd be interested in what Iris Carr told me. As neat a little murder setup as was ever planned.
I've got nothing to do with any murder setup.
Pamela Mortimer, Marigold Bradley, Edith Woodthorpe, and Beatrice Linfield.
I didn't kill them. You can't prove anything against me.
It was your brilliant scheme, Glasspool. If Mrs. Bradley's husband kills Mrs. Mortimer, while Edward Mortimer is provided with a perfect alibi, no suspicion can attach to Mortimer, although he inherits his wife's fortune. Bradley has no motive, so he's safe. Or again, if Mortimer kills Mrs. Bradley, and Bradley is supplied with an alibi, no suspicion can touch him.
Ridiculous. Fantastic. Do you think these men would commit murder because I asked them?
Well, they had to, didn't they? They owed you so much money, they had to dance when you called the tune. You threatened to tell their wives, and they knew the result of that. They'd have been kicked out without a penny. Your way, they got a fortune, in spite of the slice they had to pay you. And they got rid of a middle-aged, probably nagging wife into the bargain.
You can't prove any of this.
No, I can. You've forgotten Iris Carr. That's where the whole scheme came unstuck. Linfield. He was weak enough to agree to the murder of his wife, but unlike the rest of the precious bunch, he had some remnants of conscience. It started working in Cannes.
Oh.
What did he do? Ring you up and tell you he couldn't go through with it?
Now, look here. If you know all this, why did you come to me instead of going to the police?
You're a rich man, Glasspool.
Does that mean what I think it means?
It depends on what you think it means.
I'm willing to do a deal. I'm not admitting anything, mind. And I don't want any trouble.
I'm sure you don't.
Then, can't we come to an arrangement?
No, we can't.
What do you mean? I thought you said that
if there's any dealing to be done, I prefer to do it with the real owner of the Samaritan Club.
I am the owner.
I don't think so. Soon after you opened this place, you nearly went bankrupt. Somebody supplied you with a large sum of money. That is the person I'll deal with.
You could be sorry for that choice, Mr. Bleck.
Ah, Mr. Mortimer. I was wondering when you were coming out. Oh, don't you think that gun is a little melodramatic?
I like to be prepared. How did you know it was I who found the money for Monty?
Common sense. You hadn't enough money yourself. Your wife certainly wouldn't have supplied it. So she was the first victim of the murder scheme. Probably she'd found out that you'd been swindling her and was threatening to become very nasty about it. Right?
Very clever of you.
Who actually did the killing? Was it Bradley?
Does it matter? You hit on the right method when you explained the plan to Monty. Only it was my idea, not his.
5 murders and only 3 people to do them. Somebody must have worked overtime. Was it you, Mortimer?
Please yourself, it won't matter.
No, I suppose not. They'll sort it out at the trial.
Oh, there isn't going to be any trial. We were going to discuss a deal, remember?
I never discuss deals at the point of a gun. It gives the other side too much advantage.
Put the damn thing away, Mortimer. You couldn't use it, even if you wanted to. Make too much noise.
Shall we continue with the deal? You haven't a great advantage, have you? No, not really. I mean, nothing that's been said here counts. It's only your word against ours.
Iris Carr?
I have an idea you're bluffing there, Blake. I doubt if Linfield would have poured out the whole story over the telephone. Particularly as he intended coming to see you. But as Monty said, we don't want a lot of trouble. Anything of that sort attaching to the Samaritan would be so bad for business.
Frighten off the mugs with rich wives, eh?
There'll be no more of that.
I see. You'll rely in future on the fake roulette wheel and stacked decks of cards.
You've forgotten the loaded dice.
Stop all this nonsense and let's get down to brass tacks. Now, what do you want?
Make me an offer. Well, since you haven't really a lot to sell, £10,000. What are you trying to do? Protect your investors? I doubt if you'll be paying a dividend this year.
You've absolutely no evidence, you know. A theory, even if it's correct, isn't proof.
Large sums of money have been paid over by Bradley and Woodthorpe for services rendered. That can be traced.
Not a hope. This is a gambling club. They had very heavy losses.
We've got nothing on us. Nothing at all.
It could be unpleasant if the police started making inquiries.
Hence the reason for the £10,000.
Well, half a loaf, I suppose, is better than a limp handshake.
Get the money out of the safe, Monty.
Very good. There you are. 10 lots of 1,000 in tenors. A bit bulky.
Oh, don't worry. I bought a briefcase. Just a little safeguard for us. I shall want you to sign a receipt. In consideration for the sum of £10,000, I agree not to proceed further in the matter discussed between us. Write that out, will you, Monty?
Very good.
What a nice legal mind you've got, Mortimer.
Thank you, Mr. Blake. If you tried to pull a fast one on that little document, it wouldn't look too good for you.
Or you?
It doesn't mention the matter we discussed, but it does show that you accepted a bribe.
Discredit the witness, eh?
Very well. Is that what you want?
Fine, just sign there, Mr. Blake, and the deal is completed.
Not quite, Mortimer. You need an independent witness to this, don't you? I could dispute that it was my signature.
That's the point. Monty, ring down and ask Ginger to send Slade up. He'll do.
Send Slade up to my flat. Hurry.
Care for a drink, Mr. Blake?
No, thank you.
Slade. I'll go and let him in.
Who the devil? I'm Detective Chief Inspector
Cooper.
Come
in, Coot. Tinker gave me the letter you left. Been waiting below.
That's right, Governor. My old Ginger play ball.
I don't know what you're playing at, Blake, but it won't get you anywhere.
It's going to get you in court on a charge of murder.
Rubbish!
You see, before I came here, I dictated a full statement of what I intended to say and how I expected you to react. Dated, timed, and witnessed. Coots has got that at Scotland Yard.
That's right. Have a job to explain away that bribe if there was no truth in Blake's accusation.
Bradley and Woodthorpe wouldn't stand up to a cross-examination. When the murder plot's exploded, they'll collapse.
I'll settle with you anyway.
Oh, don't be a fool. Give me that.
That'll keep Mortimer quiet for a bit. Hurt my knuckles.
Well done, Coots, but Gospel's in a bad way. Go and find a doctor, Tinker, quickly.
Okay, Governor.
I hope he survives long enough to make a statement. You took a risk.
And to play it off the cuff. Hadn't you better get Mortimer away before he comes round? That was a beautiful right cross, Coots.
Bit of sheer luck, Blake. I'll phone for a police car. What's this place called? The Samaritan Club.
Yes. Ironical, isn't it?
That story in our new Sexton Blake series was called Lilies for the Ladies and was written by Donald Stewart. William Franklin was Sexton Blake, David Gregory Tinker, and Heather Chasen Paula. Iris Carr was played by Hilda Schroeder, Detective Chief Inspector Coots by Wilfred Carter, Ginger Norman Mitchell, Montague Glasspool Basil Jones, and Edward Mortimer was played by James Beck. The series was devised for radio by Philip Ridgway and produced by Alastair Scott Johnston.
Case closed for this week. Hope you enjoyed our stories this time. You can find more at relicradio.com. More from Case Closed, the series you heard today, and thousands of other old-time radio episodes, all available for free thanks to your support. And if you would like to help support this and all of the shows, visit donate.relicradio.com. Or the next time you're on the website, click the donate link. Big thanks, as always, to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.